Yeah, starting to come around a bit now. I was fairly wrecked there yesterday and today, and could hardly open my eyes there, but coming around now, starting to feel a bit better. I'm going to go out and get a bite to eat now soon, so hopefully that'll be me recovered then, you know.
Well, tell me, you mentioned sleep. Is sleep your biggest problem as you stand there at the moment compared to maybe a pain here and a pain there?
I don't know now. Like, after the event was finished there, we're kind of waiting for the prize giving yesterday morning. I kind of fell asleep on the floor in the prize-giving room there, but I would have said that the kind of aches and pains were the biggest barrier there the whole way through, and like the soles of my feet were the first thing to start giving me a bother, and then wrists and my neck was pretty sore for most of the day. I could hardly look to my right for some reason. It just seemed that anything that could have went wrong did go wrong, so I was kind of pleased to get through the event in one piece, considering that the injuries I was carrying there through it. So, but they're starting to kind of ease again now, and I'm feeling all right. So hopefully it's not, you know, too long term.
So when you started the race, everything working 100% at that stage?
The first few hours were fine, like, but as we were just saying last night, you know, if it hadn't been the soles of my feet, it would have been something else in a race like that. You kind of have to go in and know in your head that there is going to be some problem that comes up that is going to give you a bit of bother, that you can't get through an event like that plain sailing. You know, it's just too long and too hard, and the roads and the conditions are too tough for anybody to get through it unscathed. So, you know, you look on the positive notes, like there's no crashes or there was no major injuries that made me stop for any long period of time, and the fact that I can through it and won the event, like, you know, is definitely delighted with that. So, as I say, those wee kind of hiccups, you expect them and you're prepared for them, so it's not too bad when they do come along.
How does one prepare for a race that takes 19 hours, 19 minutes and 40 seconds?
There's a few different kind of trains of thought on how to train for it. Personally speaking, I never done more than 5 or 6 hours training on the bike this year. I just believe in that. The fitter you are, the faster you can cycle without going into the red. And so long as you don't go into the red, you can cycle all day. So long as you keep your fuel and your food and your drink, you know, as long as you're getting enough of that into you, technically speaking, you could cycle all day. So my theory is just aim on getting the engine able to produce as much speed as I can without going into the red, and that works for me. Other people do, you know, train up to 10, 12, 15 hours on the bike, and that works for them, but I prefer the shorter method to it, you know.
How do you monitor that?
There's all different sorts of kind of scientific ways of training nowadays. We have power meters on the bikes and heart rate monitors, straps on our chest, and you measure everything from weight in the morning to resting heart rate in the morning to what you're eating and, you know, how much sleep you've got the night before, and it's all tracked through a series of programs there on the computer that keeps a track of your fitness and your form and that, so that it's right on the day, you know.
And it's 100% accurate, is it, if you do what you're supposed to do?
Well, it doesn't always work out. Everybody has their own plan in place, but the problem is all your competitors have their plans in place too, so sometimes, you know, it's not everybody's plan can work out, so it worked out for me this weekend, and I was in good form for it, and I was able to ride a lot better than I had even predicted I would have, so it worked out for me this weekend.
You were the defending champion. This is only the second running of the event. What was your plan this year? You know, was it to go away early? Was it to conserve yourself?
Well, I kind of, you know, I hadn't ridden it last year, a bit of experience kind of this year, which I had none of last year. So I was hopeful of going into it and hoping to maybe break last year's time. But in the lead up to it there, the last few days, we could see that the weather forecast was predicting a westerly wind there. So there's going to be headwind for the vast majority of the race. So I didn't really think then that the breaking the time record would be possible. So I was just trying to go for the one then. And starting off as the last solo rider to start, I kind of had the luxury of having everybody else in front of me. So once I caught everybody, I knew so long as I stayed ahead of them that I was going to win. But I did have the plan to go out early and go hard there for the first hour or two down as far as Mavilla and a bit further, even up as far as Malhead, just to make sure that I'd caught everybody who'd started in front of me. And then that way, then you can relax knowing that for anybody to come actually beat me, they'd have to actually come past me in the road and then, you know, drop me and put a few more minutes into me. So that was part of the plan, to start off hard, and definitely did that. But at the same time, you can't go too far. You can't go too hard at the start, because if you do, you know, there's still another 16, 17 hours to go, and it's a long way to finish. Then you could, any lead that you build in the first hour, you could quickly lose if you went into the red, or if you just ran out of energy stores there, you know.
Did you have designated food stations, or did you have to carry that yourself?
Well, we have a support car, whole support crew behind me there in the car, so... Chris McAnally from the Foyle Club, he does a lot of work with me and my fiancée Rachel Concannon there in the car behind, and then had my parents in another car along the road, so they were feeding me food and, you know, liquids. We had energy drink, electrolyte drinks and plain water, and for food with everything from energy bars to baked potatoes to I think there was cakes and all sorts getting handed out the window at one stage. So you know, we had a good nutrition plan in place to stick to make sure I was getting the energy I needed. But as I was saying there one stage earlier, you get out around Glencombe Killin in the middle of the night and it's pitch dark. You'll eat whatever's handed to you. It doesn't matter if it's part of the plan or not. Just to keep the legs turning.
Have you any idea how many calories you took on board?
I'm not sure exactly how many I took on, but I know I burnt 14,780. From the kind of equipment on my bike, I was able to work that out. So I'm sure I've earned a bit of cake tonight, anyway.
I think you're deserving of it. What a normal man's supposed to be using about 2,000 calories per day, so you were seven times what a normal person would take.
About a week's worth of work there.
Sure was.
So that just goes to show you kind of the effort that goes into it. Like, and there's no way of replacing that many calories. When you're burning them that quickly, you just can't get that many back into the system. So you're always going to be in a bit of a calorie deficit there. So yeah, it's just a matter of coping with that. Like, and that goes back to the training we've been doing too. A lot of training we've been doing, you know, before breakfast and that, just to get the body used to burning or using fat stores as a fuel source rather than what you're actually eating. So you know, that's a big part of it too. Actually being able to utilize some of the fat stores that you have.
And the problem then is, I suppose, if you're training hard beforehand, there's not going to be much fat stored.
Well, this is it. You know, part of it as well, with the amount of climbing, over 6,000 metres of climbing in the race, you need to be in fairly good shape to go up the hills fast enough. So, you know, that's one of the perks of all this, is that you can kind of stay good and lean, but at the same time, no matter how skinny a rider can get, there's usually enough fat stores there to power them for, you know, an event like that. So it's not exactly the fat that you might see on the outside that might be powering you on, but most athletes would be kind of there's a switch now towards burning fat as a fuel. So that's the way most of us are going, and it definitely seems to work, or works for me in a way, you know.
Was there any stage when you said, I think I'll give this up and stop today?
There was, like, last year's Atlantic Way race was very enjoyable, so it was, and, you know, it was nice weather, and you're on roads that I love to cycle on and that. This year it was a lot more challenging, and the vast majority of it now wasn't as enjoyable, and it was just a real challenge for me. So it wasn't, mentally it was a challenge more so than anything else. So I'm not sure if I actually says I would, at any stage, that I would give it up, but there's definitely times I was thinking to myself, what am I doing in this race? Like, this is crazy. But you know what, that is part of the challenge too. It's not just the roads or the terrain or the winds or the distance, it's a mental challenge as well, and being able to, when you don't want to keep going, actually finding the motivation there to keep turning the pedals over and telling yourself that it's only a certain amount of kilometres to the finish, or a certain amount of hours or whatever. You always have to look at it in a different light for each situation. So if you're finish, you're better off not telling yourself 300 kilometers. You're better saying something like 9 or 10 hours, because if you start looking at the 300k, or you know, the bigger picture, it just gets too much. You just have to take it step by step, and checkpoint by checkpoint, even at some stages, is a good way to go. And just taking off different parts of the map, like when you get out of an issue, and then it's a long open road up to Letterkenny. So just get through that, take that off, and I told myself I'd get through that well. I get to Rathmullen and take a mini break there. We stopped for 5 or 10 minutes and kind of refueled and changed the clothing and that, and then I told myself we'd go on as far as Hornhead. If I got around Hornhead with a good advantage, then I would take another break. So we did that then, Derry Beg. So, you know, it's just finding those points along the road that are those, you know, kind of achievements along the road that you can reward yourself for getting in and say, well, you know, I've got enough of a buffer here now that I can take a rest for a minute or two here or there, or I can relax for a second and change my jacket or whatever it might be, something just to give you a wee bit more comfort that'll keep you going for a bit longer.
Which was the most difficult part of that course?
What was the most difficult part? It was all fairly tough now, but probably from Rathmullen to Carrigart would have been for me a fairly tough part now. Around Malin Head, it's always going to be tough as well, but you expect that. But from Rathmullen to Carrigart, I wasn't feeling great, and it's not exactly the toughest part of although it is hard roads, it's not the toughest part of the route. And I was, you know, starting to question myself there, so that probably would have been the toughest part. But I think it was, you know, it was equally tough the whole way around, and as I spoke about there earlier, like the mental battle was probably the hardest part of it, so it was great now to get through it.
In advertising the Donegal Atlantic Way Ultra Race, you know, much emphasis on the scenic roadway and all the rest. Did you see much beautiful scenery?
Didn't get much of a chance to take it in now, but it is a fantastic advertisement for the county. Like, I'm sure there'll be loads of photos and videos and all that come out from the race, and when they do start coming out, they're generally of spectacular kind of scenic backgrounds, and the riders struggling up hills, or you know, it's from a county point of view, it is a fantastic advertisement for it, and something that, if in years to come this does become a huge international event, that I think the county could benefit from greatly, having such an event, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ronan, thank you for joining us. Well done. When you recover, will that be you hanging up the bike?
I don't think so. I don't think I could ever hang up the bike. I have a few other kind of plans and goals laid out for this season. The Foyle Grand Prix coming up in the, I think it's the 16th of July this year, so that's a local home race of kind of shorter nature. I think it's 110 kilometres or something like that, so that'll be probably the next goal. But then on into the future, of kind of along the same kind of lines as the endurance race, I wouldn't mind tackling some of the likes of you know, some of the point-to-point records, maybe Milton to Malin or Dublin to Derry or something along those sorts of lines, you know. But events like that, they always, as this one did, they always take good sponsors. Like, and I was lucky enough that for Donegal Wild Atlantic Way, I had JP Corey, the building suppliers in Derry, on board, and you just couldn't do it without those sorts of supporters behind you. So, you know, it's a lot of these events, actually being able to partake in them does come down to the help behind the scenes as well from sponsors and all like that. So a special thanks to JP Corey, and obviously to my backup team as well, without whom they couldn't do any events. So it's not just my decision to go and do a race.